Hello there, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, all of whom are loved and welcomed in this space. I'm your host, Charlie Ashby, and joining me, as always, are my beloved co-hosts, Nikki Kumar and Claire Stribling. Hello.
Hi.
I should probably unmute. But greetings.
I
just thought that was a really, like, you know, the suspense was building. I thought it was on purpose.
Thought we were going to bail on you.
Not this time.
That would require what's that thing that we don't have? Patience. Hi everyone. It's been a little bit since we recorded. We had a nice little break. We had a release of the episode 6 commentary we did with Alden Diaz, which is a great episode, and it's one of those weird things where time has gone by so quickly that I forgot it's been 4 years since we recorded that.
Oh, yeah.
4 years. It's like, okay, I thought we did that yesterday, but fair enough. So that was fun to sort of dive back into that and put that up for everyone to listen to. So if you do want to listen to all our commentaries, they should all be up now on the feed. When you listen to this, we're sort of going back through and updating our podcast feed so that all the episodes will be up. But yeah, all the original trilogy, you can listen to our voice talking over them, which is what George intended. But yeah.
Certainly.
What have you guys been up to? Man.
Traveling the world. And by world, I mean the... like Central Texas. it's been riveting. Last weekend I went to Six Flags. That was fun.
Nice. Over Texas.
That's the one.
Did you ride the Goliath?
The Goliath is in San Antonio.
You know what? Texas is too damn big of a state. I assumed that there was one in Texas, but no, you're right. Texas is like 8 states, so.
No, yeah. I think it's weird because it's like the rides are similar, but they're named different things. So like what's Why Goliath in San Antonio, I think, is Batman in Dallas. it is weird, but I got to do some classics, got to do Mr. Freeze.
Mr. Freeze, if it's anything like the one in St. Louis, that one's fun.
I don't know. I've never been Probably to St. Not. Louis, but I don't know. But this one was pretty crazy. And then it broke after we came back.
Oh, no.
Just so in time, baby.
That was a little scary because basically Mr. Freeze is a roller coaster where you go through it, blah, blah, blah. And then you go up a vertical spire and then you drop down the vertical spire backwards and redo the ride backwards. So there's a lot of like hanging upside down, going backwards stuff.
Yeah, that sounds like Mr. Freeze in St. Louis too.
Yeah.
Look at it. And one of them's the same. Woo.
There we go. And so I was kind of like curious. I was like, when did it break? please tell me, was it when we were on it or afterwards or what, before we left? Anyway, we survived. And then, got to do the Titan. Probably probably my favorite roller coaster there. And then Texas Giant, of course, you know, got to go for the classics. And so, yeah, it was a high octane kind of day. And that's my life now.
We love it. We're here for it.
Yeah, Six Flags is like one of those American institutions that I need to tick off my bucket list once I travel that expansive country that you call home.
The one near Los Angeles, which I've never been to, it's called Magic Mountain. That apparently has the record of most roller coasters in one park. So,
oh wow,
really?
Yeah, it's got 20.
That's a lot of roller coasters.
It really is. So yeah, that would be an interesting one to check off. I gotta go too.
I know Universal was trying to do it. I'm trying to do like a UK Universal Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about this?
I've not seen that. No.
So yeah, they want to buy like I think they want to, or they already bought like a huge like bit of land near Bedford, and
as you do,
because it's owned by like Comcast and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I think they own Sky and stuff, so there's like an interesting amount of like rides and stuff you could potentially get out of there. I imagine maybe like some Game of Thrones type rides and stuff, which would be interesting.
Be a vibe.
Yeah, that's interesting in regards to like that stuff, because to what degree does Sky own Game of Thrones? I don't think at all.
Right?
No, they don't. So like, but they want to. I think the idea is like, because it's a big hub in the UK, they want to get as many like other organizations involved. So I think because of the natural like linkage to you know the Game of Thrones locations in Northern Ireland and stuff, they want people to come over and then potentially like travel around. I think they also want to make deals with the BBC to do like a Doctor Who park and stuff like that. So,
interesting. The favorite grade idea ever.
Yeah, maybe like a Monty Python section. Figure of BBC properties that they could do. 40 Towers the ride.
40 Towers the ride.
Like, you go backwards because Manuel
sounds a little scary. That's like a Tower of Terror kind of thing.
I'd love that. Have like an animatronic of John Cleese. Manuel, you idiot. Yeah. Can't think of any other. That's it. Just
a being.
Yeah. Because Universal, you know, like Florida, Universal has a few Marvel things. It doesn't in LA, but I remember like a Spider-Man ride, like 4D Spider-Man, and then the Hulk roller coaster was really cool in Florida.
Yeah.
So yeah,
and the Harry
some of those things,
the Harry Potter thing, right? Too, they don't have that's Warner Brothers.
Yeah, that's with Universal. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's like an independent park deal. It's very strange because it's like you'd think Warner Brothers would be like, no, but but yeah, that was apparently, interestingly enough, while we're on the topic, Disney and Universal were the ones like bidding for this Harry Potter thing, right? And the world, and basically it was Disney wouldn't make the Hogwarts Express because they were like, we got our own train system. So like, so eventually Universal was like, we'll do it. That's why they got it. Essentially, it was like it would have been like,
oh, wow,
it would have been neck and neck, but the Universal agreed to the train. So there you go.
Choo choo, motherfucker.
Now you can get your wands and your butter beer.
Although I'm not going to lie, I love the Universal like Harry Potter stuff. It would have been so much better at Disney. I'm sorry, they got the mouse money. They go really hard at it.
It would have for sure. Like when you compare Galaxy's Edge to it's like nothing. The Hogsmeade village, it doesn't really comparison. Compare. Yeah. But I've not been to the one in Florida, so I don't know.
I've been to
how much
both.
Better that one is. Yeah.
The Florida one is definitely better. Mm-hmm. But it's still not on that Disney level.
No. You
know? It's also okay. Like for me, I haven't been to either of them in America, so it's not my opinion, I feel like, should be weighted, and that, like, I'm not going to give you the full side because I haven't been there. But in my opinion, I feel like the UK one is naturally better because, I mean, it's not the same. It's not a theme park, but it is the studio sort of thing. You get to see the actual props. But the actual places you do walk through are the actual sets. Like, it is the Great Hall. Like, you walk through the Great Hall.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's like the difference of, that's like going to Galaxy's Edge and going to Pinewood. Like,
yes.
They're not like the same thing.
Yeah.
Yes, that's 100% true. But there is one specific detail that I think would alter your perception. And I don't think for some Americans it won't matter, but I think for British people it would matter, which is that the experience of being in Hogwarts makes loads of sense when you're walking through, like, you know, like a cold British like set. But when you're walking through and you're like, this is Hogwarts, and it's like Florida temperatures,
and you're like sweating your ass off.
I'm out of it. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
This is not Scotland. Don't try and make me feel like this is Scotland.
There's no way you can get my ass in a Quidditch sweater in this weather. Fuck you. Don't even suggest it. I'm not buying that.
Yeah, go to full robes.
Yeah, no way. I'm going to be sweating through the freaking Harry Potter robes. No, ma'am.
Yeah, well, the Florida Keys babes walking through Hogsmeade. That wouldn't happen. They're right.
Inaccuracy.
According to my calculations.
Oh, man. That's true. That is true. It's undeniable.
That's why I think Galaxy's Edge works, because you don't have to pretend it's Earth. It's, you know, it could be whatever it wants. You could have one in England. It could be, like, freezing. It'd be like,
that's true.
It's Kamina.
It's Kamino. And raining all the time. Yeah, very Kamino.
Speaking of Kamina, Bad Batch is back.
Well, yay!
Kamino ain't.
Oh, yeah, Kamino ain't back.
It still lives on.
Sort of.
Way. I mean.
At the bottom of the ocean.
Under the sea. That's where Kamino lives on.
You guys always have to poke a hole in my argument. Bye.
That was a fun episode, guys. See you next time.
Before we dive right into the Bad Batch stuff, another sort of clone-related development was that they just announced that Battlefront 1 and 2, the original versions of the games, are going to be re-released on modern platforms. Mm. What did you guys think about this news?
Pretty neat. A bit of
a shock.
It came out of freaking nowhere. Am I happy about it? You bet your ass I am. I'm ready to capture a command post and experience the full, because they're doing like all of the maps that were available, right? They're doing like everything.
Yeah. Including the like special, I think Xbox originally had certain maps that you could download from, I think it was like Windows or something. Which was Azarch Ventress, Kit Fisto. You could get Renvar from Battlefront 1. And I can't remember what the other map was. It was Renvar and maybe Yavin. Cool. No. Something like that, yeah.
I think it was Bespin.
Was it Bespin? Yeah, it was Bespin. It was like you're right. Yeah, it was the one where with the big tunnel. Like the different
versions. not the one with like the platforms in the sky. It was like the city square.
Yeah.
I remember shirtless Kit Fisto was the was the vibe.
What a champ.
What a blessing.
Great games. It'll be interesting to go back. Obviously we got the DICE games, which, like, I don't have a problem with, but they are very kind of different, right? Like,
they are different.
In terms of, really, we were just talking before we were hitting record, like the old Battlefronts allowed for much more goofiness. and you know, all that kind of stuff. So it'll be fun to revisit that, but I think also it's hard for me to like think about games without also thinking about how like bad the game industry is right now.
Yeah.
With all the layoffs and speaking of Star Wars, a story had come out that Respawn was making a first person Mandalorian themed shooter.
not anymore.
And that, yeah, that just got like axed as well, which is a shame because Respawn's best game is Titanfall 2. And to be able to apply Titanfall with like jetpack mechanics into Star Wars, Mandalorians, it would have been so epic.
So freaking cool.
So we missed out because the industry is gross. So we can play old games, I guess, but no luck with anything new.
Yay.
Yeah, it's particularly disheartening, like you were saying, about repackaging old games because, you know, that team has been shut down. You know, LucasArts doesn't exist anymore. It hasn't for a while. And also some of the comments that came out around this whole thing was really disturbing. And again, gaming at the minute is like where it's really being hit, but it's happening around the entire entertainment sector. Different companies are getting ridiculous now, cutting people out. But the comments were made about how EA are not focusing on IP anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So baffling when you're talking about, I mean, they're promoting the games at the moment for award ceremonies, like Jedi Survivor, I think, won some awards recently. Like, how can you even go forward with that and sort of just shit on people's work? And then it's like, well, what are you doing then? You're not making single-player games anymore. You're just putting out rubbish all the time. It's just really depressing. I mean, the Suicide Squad game thing that happened really sort of bummed me out because...
Oh my god, the Suicide Squad game.
I mean, for me personally... I was always proud of those games, the Arkham games, not just because I was a big Batman fan and I felt like the character had been...
But those games are excellent.
Those games are excellent. And not only did I feel like happy that someone was doing that properly for the first time, but also, you know, as a local lad, like Rocksteady were from North London. That was a British studio. And you didn't really see many British studios like at the front of gaming at that time. So for me, that was really cool to see these people like thrive and like do really well with this character and seeing it improve game upon game. And this is a knock to anyone who worked on the Suicide Squad game, because to be fair, one, I haven't played it. And two, I think the way it looks and stuff, like it's just not my cup of tea, the gameplay. But everything about how it looks and stuff looks great. I think the character designs are fun and all that stuff. But it's just that, yeah, like the way that industry is, like, people get kicked out of these companies and reduced, and then you find out the two creatives were kicked out before the game came out, and you end up with this thing that nobody really asked for because it's what companies assume people want. It's, you just see it all the time. I mean, look at films as well with the Coyote versus Acme. It's... just...
I wanted that so bad when I realized what the concept of that movie was. I wanted it so bad. Like, Coyote suing Acme for all of the stuff backfire. Hilarious. Freaking hilarious. What is wrong with you people? Why? I hate you, Warner Brothers. I hate you.
Yeah. It's a great ecosystem for entertainment. We are constantly seeing the artists devalued in exchange. I mean, it's like we had a great little social moment where everyone started turning on TikTokers for being at premieres and stuff.
What a time that was.
And like doing junkets where it's like, what? Like journalists are like trying to work. Like, why are you here?
They're not only trying to work, they're trying to make a fair wage and career. And yeah. They're
literally taking their spots.
Yeah.
And like I don't know who is doing it, but it's such a like sad like in like example of this instant hit fixation that sort of like the you know the corporate side of it is obsessed with, where it's like they will like devalue entertainment journalism just to put a TikToker to ask bad questions.
Certainly.
To people. And it's like,
were you uncomfortable kissing your friend in the Dune movie? I don't know if he was a TikToker or not, but that question made me laugh.
He was not easy TikToker. He's like a big British celebrity, apparently. Like, I don't really know who he was. Apparently, he won I'm a Celebrity. He was on Made in Chelsea. Okay. I was like, oh, fuck him then. Like, Nikki feels my pain.
Yeah.
It's like, I just don't care. And you're right. Like, it was depressing for me. It's like, I have to admit, I failed in a sense as an entertainment journalist. I couldn't get a job in the place that I love doing. Thankfully, I can get to do it with the podcast and stuff. But I couldn't get into those roles. And that's me as a, let's be honest, white man. Privileged white man. Now, think about all the women.
As a, let's be honest, white man. It's the way you phrase that.
Do you know what?
White man!
I refuse to pretend anymore.
If you couldn't tell, that was my Schmidt reference. But thank you so much for coming out as a white, straight man, Charlie.
I'm glad you're here for me.
Thank you for representation.
Back to my really important point.
I really agree with your sentiment. Please continue with it.
Anyway. Yeah, it's like all these really talented women and people of color and, you know, people from, depending on their sex, gender, whatever, don't get these opportunities. But people who will deliver the bare minimum because it might make you laugh like once. This is something I thought about quite a lot, actually, which is people sort of undervalue and undermine journalism, especially entertainment journalism, because, I mean, think about so many of the facts and information about films that have come out that were from journalistic outlets, whether it's Empire Magazine, you know, all these different platforms, Entertainment Weekly, just TV interviews, you know? All those snippets and facts about these films that we love and dearly, and it's through proper questioning. And then how many of those interviews can you remember? Because I can remember certain interviews that just stand out to you. You know, you go, oh, wow, that was a great question. The Happy, Sad, Confused podcast is one of those ones where it's just always a banger. Ali Plum from Radio 1, who, by the way, is a really lovely in real life. Amazing. Always just remember those questions. Always remember those questions.
Great interviewer.
Having quick fire TikTok sort of questions, you don't remember it. You just don't. Like, there's nothing, because there's nothing of value there. Mm-hmm. It's to grab your attention in that moment, and that's it. And I just don't understand, from a marketing background, how that helps. And, you know, like, unless it's like a proper meaning.
Again, it's like they don't have the foresight for it. So it's like, similarly, I think it was Universal, speaking of, did a, I think they like created a program to like fast track TikTokers into like screenwriting positions. And it's like, what? And because it's like, they don't actually care about like what they do. They care that they bring an audience already. So it's like, you know, say, what's his name? Is Josh Horowitz? Is he the Happy, yeah. Sad, Confused guy. He does not have the following that I can't even like name a TikToker. So it's like, I'm obviously not the audience. But like, you know, like they bring their followings to their junkets. So it's like, I can see the like cold calculus of it in what they think, but it's again, it's just so short-sighted and disregarding of sort of like, again, like the talent that people have worked hard for to earn the chance to do those things. It's so goofy and dumb and like grim when you think about it. But yeah. But I don't know. The optimist in me hopes, you know, things change and they change again, and you know, they'll whatever it'll be in the future, maybe it'll swing back to something more meaningful.
It is cyclical. It's just, it just gets more damaging and harder to unwrap as quickly as you'd like when it becomes so ingrained as it has in entertainment industries. Like you say, I mean, it's like mobile phones, you know, they get smaller, they get bigger, they get smaller, they get bigger. We've all been there before. And
I mean, they're just bringing the Razr back.
What, really?
Right? Isn't Motorola bringing the Razr back?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, Again, like, we somehow end up where we started.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing all of these 17-year-olds with their low-rise jeans, I'm like, I hate all of you.
Boots with the fur.
Some things deserve to die.
Yeah, and it's true. Like, you see it. It's so nihilistic. And I guess, in a sense, we're kind of culpable for it in our own way. But seeing people buy old stuff just because it's old. Sometimes it's good. Yeah. Like, iPods, I think, are good ones because they're a great way to keep your music without having to resort to classic streaming services.
Yeah. Oh, I love the videos where people are like, I put a terabyte in my iPod.
Oh, me too. I've been watching that all week. Like,
yeah.
Incredible.
Like, that's what... I wish I had one of those iPods. I never had one.
Oh, me too. We should buy one.
Yeah.
Put on the expense, the podcast expense.
Crazy. It's crazy to think about single-use sort of items. I went to, in Dallas, I went to it's actually the National Video Game Museum.
Oh, wow.
And they had, you know, like, they had a wall of consoles and, you know, going back from, you know, first generation stuff to the current stuff. And that was always cool. And, like, controllers, they had, like, a wall of controllers. And it was like looking at vintage cars. You know, it's like, it's like, oh, man, I remember the Xbox Fat Boy controller. And like those things. And then there's like obviously a Game Boy section. And I was like, it's fascinating to think about how we had or how much the phone has taken mobile gaming, you know, like what you can do on your iPhone versus when you just had a Game Boy kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's like something that's really admirable about Nintendo and how they just sort of kept sticking through it. They're like, here is the Switch. Here's the Switch Lite. You can still play games. And I think it was like, it just kind of felt like a good way to like stay in touch with the past. It's like a reason to put the phone away and play something built for that purpose. It was kind of nice to be reminded of all that. But yeah, no, it's fascinating how things are going in not always ways.
That's so true. And from a marketing perspective, again, it's something that's really interesting is that when the iPhone first came out, that was the sell, right? Like, oh, you want a watch? You want a games console? Well, guess what? It's all on this one device. And now you're seeing these companies that was like got damaged by that in a sense, doing the opposite. I think there's a famous, I don't know if it was Omega. who did an advert where it was like, this watch just tells the time. And then I think because we're coming out of the age now, we're like, actually, you respect it a bit more. Like this one device that has everything on it, your whole life, your work, everything, like, you know, it builds up. You just miss having the opportunity to sit down and read a book and watch a film.
Yeah, no, it's weird, especially like for us, we're of that age where we really have like a foot in both worlds. And I feel like the people before us and the people after us are definitely like more entrenched, but like we somehow ride the middle line of like, I remember dial-up internet and I now know like 5G, right? Like, and like, and I remember being, and it's like, we're well-versed enough in both to where it's like, I don't feel as like lost as maybe like within the sort of social media iPhone system as maybe like a Gen Zer is. But I also don't, like, it's like I don't miss when, you know, the internet would go out if somebody went on the phone or whatever, right? Like, you know, it's just those things. Yeah. So, you know, it's really, like, interesting thing to be a part of because it's like, yeah, like, we remember when things were just very, very simple. And I think there is a time at which we probably reach where it's like, we want to go back to that. I mean, nostalgia is powerful in many ways. And
yes,
sometimes for the better, because I think we could probably learn a lot from the way we might have lived before.
Certainly, yeah. You can look back, but you can't stay there. It's a bit like Indiana Jones. I should make a film about that.
Oh, interesting.
Good concept. If only there was a great film out on Disney Plus you can watch right now. But yeah, it's true. And I think, like you said, we should try to be a bit more optimistic about these things, maybe. Even though the world is collapsing. But we just, you know, think about the old times. We're all going to sit down. We're not going to look at our phones. We're going to play some lovely bit of Battlefront 2. We're going to shoot Norm Carver in the head. We're going to...
Of course.
We're going to... What map are you going to do first, guys? What do you think?
I loved Renvar. Renvar Citadel. That was my favorite.
I just feel like I need a little Mos Eisley. Just to hear that play 18 times. I know you mentioned it already, but that was the mode that I, like the Heroes Villains mode or whatever it was called. That was what I played all of the time on my Battlefront.
I don't know if this is a controversial take, but uh-oh, that's when Heroes versus Villains was fun.
You're damn right. Yes. That's like, not controversial. You're
every time,
I hate
every
it.
Time I've, yeah, every time I've had to play it, in like this current and or the newest iteration, I'm like, why is this like? Why are people playing this sweaty? Like you're trying too hard. Like, like everyone's like, oh no, come together, and then you know, bunch up, and then we're like, it's like no, like Battlefront is like just like running and gunning and like yeah, dying and not caring and respawning
buildings, and then just like force jump down and stab people. I want to climb all the way to the top of that weird spire thing in the middle of Mos Eisley.
It's being Han Solo and seeing Darth Vader and saying, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to take that on.
that's what I miss. Is, that's the thing as well. Like respect the idea of trying to make it realistic, quote unquote, to the films in terms of lightsaber combat. I don't want it to be like that. I don't want to have to like hit at the perfect time and parry. Just let me hit people with Darth Vader, you know? I miss
it. It's also why... Oh, go ahead.
No. I was just getting angry about the idea.
Yeah. Like, no, I will like, to me, it's also why we don't have as many characters, because they have to like differentiate them with special abilities. Whereas like before, because it was so simple, they could be like, oh yeah, here's all the Jedi you want. Yeah, it's like, oh, you want this guy? Yeah, sure. Whatever. Yeah. He can force push too. That's cool. So it's like, it's almost like that. That's one thing I always kind of didn't like in Battlefront, the newer ones, because it's like I want like the whole Jedi Council available. Like these are my battle fantasies, dice. Like let me just be, you know, Mace Windu. You don't even remember Mace Windu in the game. It's like, you know, what's going on? Just like that's what was good about the old one. You just scroll through that wheel and you see all sorts of crazy guys and gals and Sith Lords and you're just like, this is the one.
And I also really liked one of the things that I really appreciated was, like you said, you didn't feel cheated out of those encounters. So like, if I play the current game, because I don't play it 24/7 for like the last 20 years,
right?
Like I played Battlefront 2 recently, the current one. And it was fun, but by the time I got to the point where I could unlock a hero character, like 2 seconds and you're gone. And it's like, well, what's the point of that? Whereas if I play the classic game and you get to that point and you get to be a hero character, you can do some damage. And then, you know what, you might get killed and see little Yoda popping. Like, you know, he's like, they're turning their head and just hopping away. You're like, oh, what a rascal. Like, you're not angry about it. You're just like, ah, oh, good for you, mate.
Yeah. It had that more of an arcade feel, you know, where it's kind of like a casual play, as opposed to sort of like needing like rep points and whatever and crates and all that crap.
Ooh,
and
crates! And, Jesus, the crates.
Yeah.
I also, yeah, I just really appreciate, like you said, about the character like picking for these games. Like you said, at the Battlefront, you're like, oh, we need the main three, but we won't have Padme. We'll have this, blah, blah, blah. And then just like the idea of like in like LucasArts 2004, like, okay, we need the villains, group of villains, but we don't want a different, we want them to be differentiated. Okay, let's do Boba Fett. What's his abilities? Jetpack. Okay, cool. Rockets? Yeah, rockets. Who else could we pick? Jango Fett? Jango Fett. What's his abilities? jetpack. Rockets. Put him out there. Like, you didn't, it didn't matter. You didn't have to worry about, oh, no. But they're similar. Like, who cares?
Yeah, like, it's just like, I don't care about it being redundant. I care about playing as that person, right? Like, I want to do it as these characters, and we had it good, but you know, I think the other thing with like DICE Battlefront is how they pulled the plug, like right before they could have hit like incredibly bankable things, like Mando never existed in Battlefront, which is crazy. I think they'd stopped like right when Siege of Mandalore was coming, so like they could have done Ahsoka and then Mandalorians and all those guys, but nope. And then, you know, everywhere we are now. I mean, imagine having the like end of season one Ahsoka in Battlefront. Like, that'd be so cool. And Morgan Elsbeth with the sword of Talzin. Like, you could have had it all. But,
and do you know what? I don't have to wonder about that, because the thing I love about the PC version of the original Battlefront 2 game is the modding community. And the modding community is so good. And that base game is so good, and the way they let you mod it, fantastic. And I still play the game, the original Battlefront 2 game, which, by the way, there's more people playing the online version of the old Battlefront 2 game than there are on the not like the modern one, which is ridiculous. But the best thing about that is obviously you can add your own maps in and different characters and stuff. And the modding community is incredible. Like, there's a Rebels map you can do as Kanan, which is like so much fun. They've got the ghost in the background. I think a lot of the characters, like the models, come from the Galaxy of Heroes game. So they like really transfer really well and fit in with that sort of style. Some people make their own ones as well. There's a map that someone did, which is just a reskin of the mission, the 501st mission on the Death Star, where you got to kill the escaping rebels. But they've reskinned them so that they're all wearing the outfits from Andor, the prison outfits. Which is so much.
That's very cool.
You play as the Imperial. It'd be crazy. It's pretty fun.
People look nuts out here.
And yeah, like you said, there's a Siege of Mandalore. They've made it as a mission. So you actually like have to like hit the certain targets. There's Mandalorians, there's the Ahsoka cladded 501st troopers. You play as Darth Maul in the Clone Wars visage. You got Din Djarin map. It's so much fun. And the fact that we don't have that in these modern games just blows my mind. Like, we should have I don't know. It drives me crazy, the fact that we don't have, apart from the sequel trilogy characters, we don't even have as many as we did in the old games.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. The things we're being cheated out of. Anyway, Star Wars Outlaws coming out later.
Well, for now.
Yeah, hopefully. Because, again, it's like, once I get excited about it, it exists right now in that perfect place for me where I don't think about it, but every time I think about it, I get excited. So, like, the anticipation level is very manageable. But I'm sure once I get excited for it, they'll pull the plug, I'm sure.
I can't wait. Although I can't help but think that last bit of section of me getting angry about Battlefront sounded a little bit like this.
Indeed.
Same. You said it, dude.
You were just waiting to use
my man.
You were just sitting on this for the last 39 minutes.
Maybe. Maybe I was.
Maybe.
Should we talk about the Bad Batch?
Let's do it.
Sure.
So the Bad Batch came back last week as of the time we were recording this, which is the 2nd of March. And we had 3 great episodes to sort of dive back into that world. And another one last week, or the week that just went. Mm-hmm. Which is very interesting, I'll say. A very interesting little set of arcs there. What did you guys think of those first few episodes?
Thank God the Batch is back.
Right.
I always need them in my life, which is also sad to admit with this being the last season. They were really cool. The three they released at once were tonally very like interesting, and especially the first one, the sort of like draining monotony of, you know, life in captivity. It was like a fascinating like episode to just sort of sit through. And then of course you get the sort of adventure one with Hunter and Wrecker, and then a great little escape episode with Omega and Crosshair. So that was a really cool like three-parter to just hit. And then I loved the most recent one. Most recent one was like one of the best episodes for me, but also Omega and Crosshair are my favorite characters.
I literally sat there watching this episode going, oh, Nikki's so happy. It's like, I know he's out there watching this and just, he's so happy right now.
It was so perfect. And just Omega hustling people, like automatically, like for her, she is, for me, she is my favorite Star Wars child. Just her, Crosshair wanting to shoot the whole place up, and she's like, no, let me like steal their money.
That dynamic is April. Yeah,
it's so funny. And of course, Batcher being a good boy for all animal lovers will understand the attachment to Batcher. It was a great dynamic. And then of course the ending was both sweet because, oh, it's great to see Omega back with them, but also highly anticipated because this is the Crosshair return in a way that like it wasn't in season one. So seeing them face to face is very perfect.
And I loved, I know that this is like the coldest take of the century because I feel like every Bad Batch episode we give our flowers to the Kyners because, mm-hmm, they deserve them. But literally listening to Wrecker, well, seeing Wrecker and Omega hug and then Hunter coming out and listening to the like emotionally swelling version of the Bad Batch theme, the like triumphant emotional string, just your heart grew 10 sizes that day music. Mm-hmm. And then the intense tonal shift. I'm so scared for next week for our boy Crosshair because shit musically got weird real quick.
Yeah. We've known this for years, but like the Kiner family is so talented at storytelling through music. Like we're very lucky that they work on these things that we like.
They also got full billing, right, for the first time?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, pretty great to see the whole family, you know, coming together to make these incredible Star Wars scores. Like you said, I mean, even that little sort of like previously on at like the first part of episode one, the synth, oh, I love to call it the between 3 and 4, like dramatic, depressing synth, like just symbolizes the imperialism. Mm-hmm. Great usage there. And yeah, like I thought the first 3 episodes were a great choice because they were all slightly different in tone, but they all felt very thematically like it's like a little trilogy of like it just all worked perfectly. The writing on the show is so strong. The lighting, everything about it is just incredible. But particularly, I want to mention a bit of the visuals because, my God, like the animation style from where it started in the Clone Wars to now is ridiculous. But in episode 3, there's a certain shot that I genuinely was like, is this animated? It's so good. It's the shot where the Imperial shuttle is flying in to Mount Tantus with the Emperor on it. Mm-hmm. And it's so beautifully like painted in. It looked like a matte painting. And I felt like I was watching Return of the Jedi again for the first time. It gave me the chills. It's just so beautifully done. And that is a, you know, testament to everyone who works on the show. And, you know, there's been a little bit of talk recently. There always is. But the idea of like animation isn't at the same level as live action. Look.
Yeah, no, it's better.
Get on animation level, bitches.
Oh, man. But yeah.
It's like, come on. This is exceptional art. And I'm just glad we get to see it.
Yeah, no, it's really great. And it's so great that this show is able to showcase it. Again, it's like the miracle of the Bad Batch is they started on the cutting room floor as animatics, and now they are the most beautiful Star Wars animated show that has existed. So it's like, that's a great thing. It also bodes well for the future, of course, with the show ending. You know, it's exciting to sort of think about what the next one is and how that'll look and how they push. Cause it's also like, it also brings the question of, cause the Bad Batch very much spawns out of the Clone Wars. Does this mean the animation style will change, or will it be similar?
I'm really glad you brought this up. I'm of the opinion that going forward, the animation shows will retain the Clone Wars style.
Mm-hmm. So this is like Lucas animation style. Like that's what just I gonna think. Signature say that.
Yeah, like I think, and I personally love, you know, Rebels is my favorite show, animated show.
Mm-hmm.
I love the stylistic like visuals of Rebels, and I actually do like Resistance. I know some people aren't a big fan of it. I like different animation styles, but
yeah.
I think in terms of the best way going forward for Lucasfilm, in terms of cost saving as well, like they've put a lot of effort into this incredible, like how many years and like money has gone into that particular style and the way they've made those assets, not in terms of the Disney acquisition stuff, but with Lucas, like a lot of stuff has gone into that to make that perfect. And I just think that the Tales of the Jedi shorts were sort of it was the first time we got to see a little bit more of what you could do with that style outside of that boundary. And I think that's a good indicator, the
fact that they did Tales with the same. And then it's like the same question of like, because we know Rebels is, you know, obviously they were going for different sort of like inspiration pieces, but we also do know that Rebels is the way it is because it did not have the funding of the Clone Wars.
Yes.
So it's also like, if it did, would Rebels have looked in this like in this way too? And then that's weird to think about also, because it's like, Rebels is very. I guess that's sort of the thing I remember seeing was like the Clone Wars is based off of those like sort of blocky puppet, like marionette dolls. And then Rebels is based off of Kenner action figures. Yeah. So it's like, they're very sort of slimmed down and all that. And that's also really funny to think about Rebels translating into sort of this current iteration of animation. It's a great department. They're always doing the coolest stuff.
I think it's naturally going forward. It's just a really clever way to, like you said, like the assets. You got the Imperial assets, which worked naturally in the Bad Batch. You know, you got Vader there. If you want to tell that story going forward, I'm really intrigued to see what they do. But more importantly, while I love the art style and the team and everything that works on that, I really hope that Jennifer Corbett and Brad Brown are behind the next show as well. While I want there to be more creatives, and I think that animation is actually the breeding ground for new creatives, in the same way that we got Dave with the Clone Wars, I do want them to have control over another show, because the way that this show has told these stories is just incredible. I think if you were just to pitch me the Bad Batch show a few years ago, you're thinking, okay, well, it's going to be this, you know, ragtag group during the Clone Wars up to shenanigans and, you know, fighting and stuff. And then we get this really in-depth tale of, you know, betrayal, love, what it means to be a family.
Purpose
in a galaxy that, you know, no longer wants you. But more than that, it's also, there's some really great sort of shock, in a way shocking, because I don't think you see it much on TV, especially in the quote-unquote kids show. But
I'm going to, or you go, no, go ahead.
No, you go.
I just wanted to shout out a Twitter user who will remain unnamed. when they were like, I'm skeptical about the Bad Batch being a military drama. I want it to have this, and not be a military drama. And I was like, my guy, you just described all the aspects of a military drama. like what are you looking for? Like, do you just mean you don't want them going on missions every week? And he's like, yeah, I guess that's what I mean. I'm like, Christ. It's weird. It's a weird like understanding of what like a war drama is. Cause it's not just action. Like it asks a lot of those same questions of the Bad Batch. It's like, you know, and the clones, like the clone dilemma of like, who am I when I'm discarded, when the war I was made for is over? Like, what am I? Like, these are the things of military dramas. So, yeah, I think there was a lot of like mass simplification from people who didn't know what the genre was capable of. So yeah, I think they've executed this show pretty much perfectly. I wouldn't like change really anything about it. And I think it's just going to be a very sort of like, it's going to be a dark ending, you know? I hope not too dark, but it's not going to be great. And I love, especially just speaking of the darkness, like I loved Hemlock's little like necromancer goon cave of like the chamber within the chamber.
is that what he calls Palpatine's butt?
Yeah.
His little goon cave.
Little goon cave.
sorry.
Cause yeah, like it's exciting. It's what this kind of material has always done, in fleshing out what the films put out there. Right. So what Mando and Bad Batch are now sort of accomplishing through this necromancer idea and how that will then, you know, inform how we look upon episode 9, the sequels in general, whatever. Like that's always been sort of like a really great role that, you know, these animated shows in particular have played. So it's just exciting to see it all come together. Finally.
Yeah, and that's what I was wanting to point out as well when you said about that military experience, because Jennifer Corbett, I think she mentioned at Celebration that she was in the military. Mm-hmm. And you can tell those experiences come through. But also for me, I've been doing a lot of research recently for the show that I've been wanting to do for the network. And a topic I hadn't really dived into too much about my own sort of heritage and stuff like that. And it's just really interesting to see how, you know, imperial rule tackles places, and often the closest to home get hit first when it comes to colonization and taking over, and how that affects the clone troopers. And I thought that's just really intriguing. By the way, there's a really great book. I have to try and find it, but about the Irish and how they were like the first sort of place that Britain conquered, really, in terms of colonizing and treating people like less than human. And it's just, yeah, I just found the way that they deal with the clones very intriguing, in terms of not just military members leaving in the military, but also like the way they're treated just in general, like by society, like it's defunct and looked down upon and easy to experiment on, and nobody cares. And a few years ago they were like being paraded for the streets. It's just very depressing. And then like you see like the bits of like land and stuff that's taken over by the like every season we've been through this show, like, you see an Imperial presence and you're kind of like, oh, that's kind of disturbing. And now we're at the stage where there's like a whole camp set up. You're like, wow. It, you know, it doesn't take long, does it?
No, I mean, there must be something that, like, just we inherently know in our DNA about, like, responding to this, because it's like, unfortunately, probably like the oldest story in human history is of conquest. Like, that's just what happens. That's, you know, go to the beginning of time. A lot of it is I take from, you're next to me, I take from you, you know? And it's like, it's almost like this thing that's so ingrained in how, you know, this species has moved across the globe. It's like you, when you see it in stories, whether they happen in America or not America, in Earth or, you know, Star Wars planets, it's like you understand the same feeling. It's not like a foreign concept. Like we get it. And we understand how it's, you know, the brutality of it, of just how people treat people when they have more power.
Depressingly so, yeah.
Like shit.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, just really fascinating. And there's a lot more depth in the show than, like I said, it does hit you in the feels. And Crosshair's character is, you know, I remember in, again, it's what you said, sort of, Claire, as well. I have to commend Nikki really, really well, because straight from the get-go, you are so defending this guy. And I'm being like, oh, well, he's doing these things that make me really angry. And you're like, no, listen. He'll come through. And I'm like, I really hope so, buddy. And then you get to the point where...
That'd be a great story. I don't see it right now.
Get to the point where in season 2...
You have
two,
to... Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you get to the point where in season 2 and he, like, just shoots that lieutenant in the head. And you're like, God damn it. And then you get to the point where at end of episode 4 where I am, like, emotionally being destroyed by the, you know, the tension in the room at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It's, oh, it drives me. Because I'm very interested to see where they go from that. Because I feel like the show naturally wants to elicit a response from you of they're angry at him because he turned their back on them from their point of view. In terms of, like, just leaving and joining the Empire. But I'm wondering, actually, it'd be more heartbreaking if the reason they're angry is not because he just left, but because if he was there, Tech wouldn't have died.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, all these things, like...
Oh.
Yeah, you know, all the what could have beens kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's very interesting. And again, it's like, I think what happens, again, is like, Crosshair was always complicated because his turn, so to speak, was like induced upon him, obviously, as a clone.
Yeah.
But then it was like, okay, so how much of this is choice? And then you find out quite a lot of it's choice. And yeah. And I think it's like, it's more interesting to me to think about why and understand that the why is not just because he's an asshole. Like,
yeah.
Like it's so much deeper. It's fascinating. And like, I just watched the Solitary Clone episode earlier this week. I think it might be my favorite Bad Batch episode. And it's like when he shoots the what's it called? The like person they're after instead of Cody. Like he takes the burden off Cody. Whether he like understands he's doing it or not, like it's almost like the, you know, in a perverse sense, like, you know, end of Dark Knight when Batman's like, I can take that on, like, you know, like put it on me. And I think Crosshair unknowingly is like essentially doing that for Cody. He's like, you're not going to have that blood on your hands because I'll just do it.
Yeah.
And so like, so I think there's all these great layers to him, and it's like, you gotta allow characters to do bad sometimes and then see them come back. I think that's probably something that people don't do very well in terms of Star Wars, because unfortunately, you know, there are a lot of bad people in Star Wars, but it's also a story of redemption, and you have to balance the two and understand, you know, why things happen the way they do and whatever. So, yeah, Crosshair coming back always made sense to me. I always wanted it because he was my favorite one. So I think it's going to be a rocky road, but I think they're ready to accept him. I think it's going to be harder for him than it is for them.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Spooky music permitting. I think that we are just in for this big emotional ride coming up. That was such a ride that we went on with Crosshair, though, and just shows how differently he thinks from our sweet baby girl. And yeah, it's going to be a tough next episode, I think. I'm going to be just sitting like with a tub of ice cream getting ready to sad about shit, because yeah. I just want them to be okay, but there's so many burned bridges and so much healing that has to happen. Ugh.
I love his energy, Crosshair's energy with Omega as like reluctant uncle. Like,
yeah.
You know, uncle, it's been dragged to the American Girl store, you know?
Exactly.
Like, I don't really want to be here, but I like this kid. We need each other. And
it's fascinating because I think I don't remember which one it's in, either the first or the third episode, he calls her Omega for the first time in the whole show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he's like, Omega, like, don't like come back for me kind of thing. So it's like watching that grow, the did they teach you Plan 72 thing, like all these little pieces just coming together. I think they've always been ready to have a really cool relationship since the kind of the pilot episodes, but also especially the Kamino ones at the end of season one where he saves her and she kind of like challenges him before that and all that stuff. So it's very fulfilling to see them properly come together.
For me as well, what I think is really interesting is the way I viewed it personally with Crosshair and Omega is that, and sort of what you said as well about the Cody stuff, is that as an Imperial, Crosshair's constantly looking for that sort of familial connection, some place he can call home. And the closer he gets to things, like you said, he like takes that risk to like take that burden off Cody's shoulders. Cody gets out of there. And so everyone that he's reaching out to slowly fades off. And that's the point where he realizes that the Empire isn't that sort of home for him, and that they're not treating like the people around him fairly. Especially with Mayday. And yeah. I think what's particularly
I love Mayday is perfect Clone Wars because it's like, I see cool clone, he's not surviving the episode.
They've got like a very like telling name.
Yeah.
Name Suicide.
Oh man.
Name's Dick.
What's the other guy? Cut Up? Like Cut Up was one of them.
Oh yeah, yeah. Cut Up.
Like he's not making it.
He will get cut up.
But yeah, and the thing what I like about Omega's relationship with Crosshair is like as they started off naturally, like he's like, this is my family. But as they choose to go off against him, he feels neglected and that they chose someone else. But when they're in the prison together, because there's been a bit of time away from Crosshair and the group and Omega with the group, I think what he actually sees in Omega as well is his brothers, like specifically his brothers, like the
mannerisms,
the mannerisms, the way she works, like you said, like the Plan 72 and, you know, like cheating people out of stuff. Like he sees that like, she's lived through this life and It's like the closest he can get to his brothers in that moment, which, you know, warms my heart. And you know that she's
he knows she's family, right?
Yeah. Like,
and that's how they see him. That's how season one ends. And she's like, "No, you're our brother. Come back." He's like, exactly. "No, I will sit here and drink salt water for 32 days."
And yeah, exactly. And she's the one that always reaches out to him and says, "No, you are family. You can come back."
Yeah.
And he just happens to take it up on this time. And yeah. I really love the moment where he goes back for her. And it's like, okay, but let's be clear. Like, I've got skills. Let's use them. And she's like, okay, fair enough. And that moment is so badass when she throws the bag down. It's like, okay, we'll do it your way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's so good. It's a great, you know, dynamic episode. And again, and shout out to Harry Lloyd for bringing a new flavor of shitty Imperial.
Oh my God.
Old Viserys Targaryen.
That was the Imperial with the most neck I have ever seen.
Right?
I've never related more.
thick. Man. It's like Gaston when he breaks the tape measurer.
To shout out to my other heritage, it was nice to have a Yorkshire accent in Star Wars.
There we go.
Hey, yeah, that was a really interesting choice.
Yeah, I really loved that. Like,
because it's very not Imperial, right? Like
yes.
The point is, like, the Imperial voice is not working class, right? Like, no, it's very it would be very uncommon to probably hear that.
Queen's English, of course.
Yeah.
Or King's English now, I suppose. But yeah, I was very intrigued because I saw someone tweet out Harry Lloyd in Star Wars was at work, and I was like, by the way, I always say I won't check Twitter and I always fail because I know I will check it. So I wasn't really, I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess he's in it. And so I was sort of expecting Harry Lloyd's sort of natural voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so to hear the, hey, up, doc. It's just that in the episode, but to get on, there's been trouble down to Mill. It was really great. I thought he was a really good character, a really good classic Imperial style character. You know, it's a great way of as well showing you the corruption of things now, the fact that they're just, you know, paying off people and scamming them.
Yeah.
And also, I love Harry Lloyd. He's a great actor. Do you know who he's related to?
Charles Dickens.
Yeah. Did you know this, Claire?
I did not know that.
He's his great 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 grandson.
Huh.
Which it's means like that technically Charles Dickens is canonically a Targaryen.
Yeah. We knew it. Blood of my blood.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought this week's episode was really good. I think my favorite one so far is still episode 3, just by the nature of, you know, it was just thrilling, that escape. And look, I'll be honest, I love me some Palpatine. I love me some weird shit. And I love that they mentioned... I loved the fact that they mentioned the weird shit. Like, he's like, there are some in our own ranks that think this is really fucking weird.
Oh my god.
Oh man, dude, the hands Hemlock is gonna get, like the shit he's gonna get by the end of this season, it's gonna be
fun to watch.
No Imperial has asked for it more.
I kind of really hope
around he gonna find out.
Yep,
I really kind of hope that this is gonna be a weird comparison. I know, for me. I really hope the season ends a bit like the first Mr. Bean movie.
What?
You know?
Go on.
In what way, Charlie?
You know how in the Mr. Bean movie, he like accidentally like paints over Whistler's mother, the painting?
Sure.
It's like really shit. Sure. I want like him to like announce the first clone of Palpatine, but he's like, shit, fuck. He ends up ordering off, I don't know what the Star Wars equivalent of Wish.com is. and he ends up with with a Snoke in a tank. It's like, ta-da! Snoke in a tank. It's a perfect replication of you, sir. He's like,
one-to-one. Looks just like you, buddy.
What the?
It's like, just funny you mentioned Snoke, because it's like, I knew they probably weren't going to show it to us, but it's like, if Snoke's as good as they got in, like, 40-ish years, like, what if these ones look like? Like, my God.
Christ, yeah. I also love the idea of, like, there being, like, five babies, and one of they all look like Snoke, apart from one, who looks, like, perfectly like Rey's dad.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, we got there in the end. Nothing bad will come of this, I'm sure. Like, they can just be backups. It's like, oh.
Yeah. No, it's a fascinating thing to sort of think about the scope of the cloning operation. Because it's true. It's like they did create Rey's dad, and they also obviously created some suitable version of Palpatine that was able to at least, like, you know, hold court. but yeah, it's a really cool through line that's going to be going, hopefully, for a while.
Yeah, two things as well to mention from that sort of section as well. I thought it was interesting that the way that that place designed is supposed to be scientific, but there are runes on the floor, like Sith runes, which I'm like wondering how much the religious aspect of that is being brought in. The M count, which, you know, midichlorians, baby, are back. Nice to see. And I have a question for you guys. Do you think that Mace Windu had an M count, or did he have an MF count?
Oh, no. No. No.
Mm. I'll let Sam Jackson answer that one.
Jeez.
Oh, man.
Can't take you anywhere.
Oh, dear.
We should force you to tell him that joke to his face. Somehow. Somehow we need to.
Can we play the clip of Stellan Skarsgård? Is that a TikTok question?
just since we were talking about that stuff, is it kind of like funny that that actually wasn't a TikTok question? Like, that actually gave him a chance to tell a cool story.
I felt really bad for him.
Yeah, but she snapped back. It was okay.
Yeah, she's good. She's good.
She's got enough wit. Yeah. God bless her.
The other thing I noticed about that sequence, unless I'm mistaken, and go back, but I'm pretty sure Hemlock mentions, like, multiple Force user subjects or multiple M count subjects, which made me question. I know they said about the fact that Dark Disciple will be taken into account. Do you think Asajj Ventress is one of the bodies?
Oh,
I think she's one of the bounty hunters.
Okay,
that gets called in. But I mean, who knows? Right?
Who knows?
I love not knowing. So, yeah, no, that was my first instinct, was that she's part of, when they send out this epic wide message, she's part of that.
That makes sense. But I also like the idea that Palpatine keeps around the underlings that have failed him.
Because it's within reason. Surely.
Do you think we're going to see Dooku in Dooku's head in the jar?
That would be funny.
Whoa.
How they got that off Invisible Hand, I don't know. But that's a good question for another time.
It was just rolling down the hallway and someone saw it on their way out.
It must have rolled down when it was going down.
Yeah, you think.
Oh, man.
He's still alive.
or like Palpatine would, like, secretly, like, snip hairs off the back of his head and hang on to him for some DNA.
Oh, that'd be great.
And so what was that? Nothing, my apprentice.
I used to have longer hair than this.
Did you?
I didn't know.
It's definitely not for cloning. I wanted to put it in a locket.
I think Dooku would have been very anti-cloning.
Oh, I think so too.
What, him cloning a Jedi or cloning
of
in
like,
general?
Of the thing where Palpatine's like, a lot of people don't think this is cool. I get the impression that Dooku's one of them.
Maybe, yeah. He did go along with the plan. So it's like how in depth has this plan been? Like it, I feel like it has to have been going for at some point because the Kaminoans were aware of the project.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this is one, just again, my personal feeling, I feel like Palpatine played this one close to the ropes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anyone knew. Okay. As far as like the apprentices.
Maybe like acolytes and stuff.
He's gotta have some kind of I can't tell him everything.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Like Vader didn't know about Exegol, did he, until I can't remember which comic it was. He's going back there apparently. In the press release.
Good for him.
Like he went to Exegol between 5 and 6. Okay.
He
went
back there. I hope he enjoys it. Yeah.
Good for him, buddy. Yeah. So yeah, excited for Bad Batch. The show is just great. I mean, there's nothing else we can like just heap of praise. Like, I have nothing bad to say about the show coming back. It did make me look like an idiot for a minute, so that's my one critique of the show.
Oh, okay.
Which I know is very difficult for me to look like an idiot on the internet. No, it was funny because they released one of those like preview clips for episode 2. And it was the two clones. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, these don't sound like Daniel Logan. Looks like he won't be in this. And then it's like, in the actual episode, here's a third clone. Guess who it is? Charlie, you dipshit. So yeah. I felt like I had egg on my face. But
shout out to getting Ricky Baker to voice some clones, though.
I know. Ricky Baker.
Ricky Baker. Happy birthday. Also, I'm glad you brought this up. Do we not trust Daniel Logan to just be able to voice all three of them, or what?
Let's be honest. He's an old. He's a man now. Doesn't sound like he's the older clone of those three children.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I met him in person randomly at a BJ's brew house in Irvine, California. I ran into him in Irvine, California in 2021. Okay. That man still sounds like he's a teenager. I'm just saying the speaking voice is not adult man. It's still, we're going through puberty a little bit. So
I'm just
saying he could have done it.
After hearing some stories of the Rise of Skywalker premiere, he should just be happy that they brought him back for one character. And I will say nothing else, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah, that too. allegedly. But yeah, like I think it's distinguishable in his voice now enough. Like if he was going to play a young ish Boba Fett, like early 20s, I'd be like, fine, absolutely.
Ricky Baker.
But Ricky Baker sounded more like Temuera Morrison than Daniel has done. Which isn't, it's natural. It's this age thing, I don't expect Temuera to voice young Boba either.
No.
Although that'd be great.
Like, unless it's a video game.
For reason!
Amazing.
It's like I thought it was a really clever idea, like of having him there, but also having the younger quote unquote voices as well. Very worried about those two clones though, because in the trailer looks like Pabu gets attacked. So good luck to them.
Good job, guys. You had one responsibility to keep one planet safe, and you screwed it up.
You done did it, kids.
But yeah, lots to come. Lots of exciting stuff. And it's also like true to animation form, probably. I'm assuming everything we've seen in a trailer is just the first half of the season. So,
definitely.
So yeah, just makes you wonder what is ahead. Nobody can know.
I'm interested to see Well, first of all, if there's going to be an epilogue, like we got with Clone Wars, which would be interesting. Like, if we get, like, you can imagine if there's, like, a time jump.
Mm-hmm.
And we should, like, Palpatine getting out the cloning chamber or something. and also, yeah, when Lucasfilm Animation announces the next project, because I'm assuming that Bad Batch has been worked on for a little while now, and I'm assuming that they've started working on something new. So, it feels like they're playing it a bit more to the chests in terms of announcements recently with Lucasfilm Animation. I know that we got Rebels, like, what? 2013?
Oh, as an announcement?
Announcement, yeah. That Dave Filoni, like,
That was pretty early.
Yeah. And then Bad Batch, we didn't find out for a little while. So, yeah, I'm intrigued to see.
I think it's one of those things, too, where it's like, they now don't tell you things until Celebration.
Like
I think gone are the days of a press release show announcement, right? Like, yeah, I think that's if whether that's close to the chest, I don't know, but like it definitely means they're very conscious of timing in terms of lining it up with like big events.
But then again, they will announce the second season in a random news article.
Yep. For some reason.
Of which one?
Ahsoka.
Oh. Yeah. That I guess it's kind of different.
Outlier. Yeah, I know. It's just one of those. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Probably wait till Celebration. Do you think it'll be this next Celebration then? We'll find out.
I think we might find out, considering it'll be a year since Bad Batch finished. So I'd be surprised if they didn't announce anything in terms of an animated show.
Mm.
Yeah. Because I was surprised that the amount of people that thought Lucasfilm Animation would be, like, done, like, being erased somehow. When they only, like, recently got a logo, like, what, last year? 2 years ago?
And ridiculous. Like, and Dave Filoni just said, they're using Tales as the proving grounds. So it's like,
yeah.
Why would you make a proving grounds for somebody that will never go into anything new? Like, so I think the idea of animation stopping is quite silly.
Very silly. But yeah, the future looks bright, certainly. And I'm excited to be part of it with you guys. Anything else to add before we wrap up this week?
I think we had some sad news that happened since our last episode.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So since we last recorded, sadly, Carl Weathers passed away. It was a shock for all of us, I think. You know, it's one of those, not that any death is, you know, one of those things. It was just one of those shocking ones because we'd seen him so recently in person and the energy and enthusiasm that he had for the projects he was working on. I mean, like, such a talented man, like, not in terms of acting, but all the stories you saw from conventions or, like, behind the scenes on The Mandalorian, just really beautiful, and, yeah, it's one of those really sad stories, and, yeah, much love to his family.
Yeah, dude was an icon. It's still crazy to me that he's in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Let alone in Star Wars, like, directed Star Wars. Like, it's still crazy to me that he could, that he got into all that. And, I think he was one of those sort of icon celebrities that kind of felt a little immortal. Like, he didn't even look old, right? Like,
no.
I don't remember how old he was.
He wasn't very old.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where, like, yeah, he was just always sort of booming with life and very very sort of central to things that were going on, a central part of the three seasons of The Mandalorian so far. And it's gonna be really sad to, you know, both not have him in Star Wars and also just, you know, not have him around in general.
Yeah.
I think the stories people have told in terms of sort of how he was as a person, I think speaks volumes. And,
truly.
We'll miss him. BP's car.
BP. That's exactly what I was going to bring up, is that his entire energy, his mantra was so positive, was so bright. His little catchphrase mantra, be peace, at the end of all of his tweets and stuff, mm-hmm. where he was always just – he came across as a man who was so grateful for every person he met and every opportunity that was presented to him. And he took that grateful attitude, and he just was able to magnify that and reflect it out into the world and just be such a bright and kind presence to everybody. He was a star. He was undeniably – he just charisma out the wazoo, an incredible action star, an incredible sense of comedic timing, and just like a warm, bright – human being that it's really sad that the world is losing. But we're very thankful to have had him, especially in our Star Wars.
He was a perfect actor to bring into Star Wars because he sort of summed up what I loved about the original movie, which is this like full of life, realistic actor who made the whole thing feel, even though it's like surrounded by this weird fishy blue guy, and a guy in a helmet. He made you feel like that was realistic. Yeah.
And
he made it feel like, okay, this is like a galaxy that I feel like I can see and actually live in.
Yeah.
And I actually watched something with him, like an old thing that I loved. I watched an episode of him the other day and I couldn't stop laughing again. And it was the Arrested Development. It was the one he says, Lucille 2. And she's like, do you like soup? And he goes, like it? I love it.
It's just something how he delivers it, too. You're just like, oh, my God.
And then, I saw a story of Mitch Hurwitz, who created Arrested Development. He was saying that he originally, he felt really bad because he'd written this whole script, which is, sort of jokey about Rocky and stuff like that. And when he asked him to be in it, he was like, I don't want to do anything like making fun of Rocky and like just a sort of generic. Why don't you do something like make me seem cheap? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, go for it. And then you got that whole, you got a stew going. it's the best.
No, there's still meat on that bone. So funny. You can't not just the way his comedic timing was, it was just so warm and so funny, and in things that did not need to be as funny as they were, it was just iconic. Ugh, brilliant man.
What's your favorite why don't we wrap up with our favorite Greef Karga line?
Oh, man.
Magic hand thing. I'm going to throw it out there. Do the magic hand thing.
Oh, what are the...
Brilliant. There's so many.
That's a good one. That's always going to be classic. Man, I can't remember how it goes, but it's something like your success is my success. Like, that's the ethos of it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember exactly how he says it. I just love the way he delivers that line.
I love the way he delivers the, they all hate you, Mando.
Yeah.
They all hate you, Mando. It's a good one.
It's
hey, let's make the baby do the magic hand thing. Come on, baby, do the magic hand thing. It's so good. I pulled up the direct verbiage of that because I was like, I know I've missed most of the humor of that quote. Oh, my God.
I think my favorite Greef moment, though, also is how in the beginning of season 3, when Din's like, his name's Grogu, and he's like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. And then by the end, he's like, and for your, apprentice, Din Grogu. I love that kind of full circle moment.
Yes.
Now Greef's going to be so missed.
Oh, there's another one. Some of my favorite people are bounty hunters.
Yes. Oh.
But yeah. So a way to wrap up. We've got the good and the bad, but we can always find the joy in those moments too. Guys, it's lovely talking to you again. Where can we find each other?
In our hearts.
Oh, that was cute. I like that. Also true. I guess I'll start. You can find me across all the social medias at CStribs. You can catch me on Broaxium. Sunday nights, I am shooting the poodoo, just doing all sorts of pop culture, you know, shooting the poodoo with friends, just hanging out. It's a good time. Come hang out in the chat. And then Tuesday nights, I am playing Skyrim on BX Gaming. So it's been fun. And yeah, I think that's it.
Yep. You can find me at Naquicious, NAQUICIOUS on Twitter. That's where my maddest rambling will go. And then, Imperial Senate Podcast. We got some fun stuff cooking. And then we have another project, actually, that I have going on that is nowhere near close to being announced. Mm. But I will tickle some fancies and say hopefully by the summer we will have something cooking. So that'll be very different to podcasting, but hopefully works out.
Interesting. Well, you've piqued my interest and you've tickled my fancy, Nikki. I can say that ever since 2016 you've always tickled my fancy, and I hope I've tickled yours as well.
I don't like how this ended.
Real kinky, real sick. Who's tickling what now? My god.
You're the one who had a BJ with Daniel Logan.
Oof. No, absolutely. First of all, how dare you even suggest that? Please, I'm not doing. No. BJ's Brew House. It's a brew. We split up. Thank you, Nikki. You know what BJ's is.
Of course.
The Pazookie. Thank you. Yeah, we did not split a Pazookie. He definitely walked in there. He was walking out without a mask, and people were trying to get him to put a mask on. So
that's how. Well, none of that surprises me.
Yeah.
God bless him.
God.
Well, he's had the bad experiences with putting a mask near his head.
Oh.
You can say that again.
That's sad.
And you can follow me on Twitter at CMWASHBY, where in my link tree in the bio, you can find me everywhere else. I recommend follow me. I don't recommend it at all, actually, to be honest. See ya.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
That's fair.
Yeah, I don't want to let you down.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Bye.
Oh,
just to see how far we can push clear. No, it's been lovely for you listening to the show. We'll be back next time with more of this mess.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hang it up.
Thank you for listening to the Imperial Senate Podcast. If you would like to hear more from the senators, please visit our website at imperialsenatepodcast.com. There you will find links to our Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, as well as our Discord server, Twitch, and YouTube channels. You can also email us at imperialsenatepodcast@gmail.com, and please consider leaving a review on your podcatcher of choice. Thanks, and may the force be with you.
Dissolve the council permanently. The last remnants of the old republic have been swept away.